You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Anastasia Patsy. She's calling me from St. Petersburg in Russia. Anastasia, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, and thank you for the invitation.
Anastasia, so let's talk about the Museum of Nonconformist Art. Can you tell me your role there to begin with and a little bit about the mission of the museum?
Well, it's a very unusual museum. It's not a classical museum, which one can find out from the name. So we are dedicating ourselves to researching the other side of a Soviet culture that existed starting from the middle of last century, so the 50s, and until today. Our collection is basically is based on works that were banned from the official galleries and museums in the Soviet times because they were produced by so-called illegal artists who were against the Soviet ideology, against the government, well, who were practically forming the cultural opposition in the Soviet times. So this is our focus, and the collection has now about 4,000 artworks. Most of them were donated to the museum by the artists themselves. So it's a very interesting institution, and I work here starting from 2010, so it's already my seventh year, and first I've been working as a curator, and 2 years ago I was offered the directorial position at the museum.
So as director, are you also curating at the museum, or is there a curator and a director, is there a large staff?
Well, fortunately, I can't hold myself from curating because we have a very small team. And also, I just really enjoy working on projects and exhibitions. So I also work as an independent curator. And here at the museum, I have to find a way to combine administrative work and, the creative process of curating exhibitions. But usually I do two or three every year.
So let's talk about some of the, I mean, there's a number of things I want to know now about the museum. The collection, it's a huge collection. And is it always all exhibited? How are they curated? How do you curate different sections? And maybe you could talk about a show that's up now, but it sounds like the museum is constantly collecting. And you're saying it's from the 50s, to be clear about the range, until when? Is there a span when it ends?
So we don't have any time limit. We collect works, for example, from exhibitions that we host on our venues, so contemporary art. We have works from the 90s, from 2010, so even very new works created by artists who we work with. But it's important to say that the museum itself is a part of a large art center. It is called the Pushkinskaya 10, and it is a former squat. So we share one building here in the center of St. Petersburg, about 5,000 square meters, and a part of the space is used for storage. The other part are art studios, exhibition spaces, but what we have on display is on one side about 10% of our collection that changes once or twice a month, the permanent exhibition, and then we have several venues where we show temporary exhibitions that are not only limited to non-conformism and Russian non-conformist art, but just show important phenomena from contemporary art worldwide.
So you said that you continue to collect work, and you continue to collect work even up to the present. Would you collect an artist for the Museum of Nonconformist Art that made work last year?
We would do, for example, if we already have some earlier works made by him or her. So generally, the artists whose work we collect they come from the elder generation. So most of them, so some of them died a long time ago. Most of them are in their 80s or maybe sometimes in their 90s. So it's also great to see that many of them still produce new works also in such an age and in such a life situations, and we would take those works, some of them, in the collection if we would be offered by the artists.
It's an interesting term, nonconformist. You know, it's. I mean, I understand it's in relationship to state-sanctioned galleries that are that can have a level of censorship to them, but it also seems to imply that the rest of the artists working today are conformist artists, which doesn't sound like what any artist wants to be, right?
That's true. So actually, for this particular culture that we work with, there are different names. We really like the word nonconformist art, but it is also sometimes called the art of the Soviet dissidents, or it can be called the second culture or the art of the underground Leningrad. So there are many terms that can replace each other. Of course, today in 2017, since there isn't really conformism as we know it from the Soviet times, there is also no non-conformism. But there are still some strategies, tendencies, and artistic visions that shift from the last century to today, or some young artists working with a heritage of non-conformism. So we try, when working with contemporary art, we try to find those connections and see how the cultural, the independent cultural experience of Soviet oppositional art affected and influenced what is happening in Russian contemporary art today.
And so let's talk a little bit about that in terms of Russian contemporary art today. It sounds like you're saying there's a historical influences on contemporary art today, but isn't there also political influences? Aren't there certain images that are banned, for example, you know, Vladimir Putin in drag, or do I misunderstand that issue?
Well, we always have to deal with political issues during our work because non-conformist art is from the very beginning also a political art, and it was a product of the culture that resisted the political regime in the Soviet Russia, so it has this oppositional component. Today in Russia there are still many factors that make working with contemporary art for state museums sometimes difficult. Some particular images can be censored for one or other reason, although officially there is no censorship, but curators and administrators try to find some other reasons and sometimes very technical or formal reasons for not showing one or the other object. What helps us is that we are a non-governmental institution. We are run by an artistic union, which is also not connected to the state. So this is what makes our financial circumstances sometimes very difficult, but what lets us keep our freedom and keep on working what we find interesting and relevant for Russia and for the social context, despite some conditions that state museums have to follow today.
And let's talk about something that's happening in the museum now, a recent show that was curated or that you were involved in or not. Is there a particular show you want to discuss that's at the museum now or has been there recently?
Well, I can talk a little bit about the last exhibition I curated here at the museum. It took place this spring in March and April 2017. It was called Transpositions to Our Ways to How We Find Our Ways to Transcendental Homelessness. Generally, the exhibition focused on the concept of home and what it means for contemporary artists today who are always on the go, who travel from one residency to another, and 12 artists from different countries who were once residents here at our museum, they were invited to present a visual statement about what home means to them and how they interpret it.
And you said how we find our transcendental home. Is that what you said?
Yes, right.
So it
was how we find our ways to transcendental homelessness.
Homelessness. So explain that more, because I don't understand as much as what home means to an artist. So maybe through an example, you could explain or illustrate that idea of transcendental homelessness, which I love that term. I just want to understand it more.
Well, the transcendental homelessness is not my term. Actually, I found it in one of the books by a researcher, George Lukács. He's not very well known in the artistic field because he mostly worked with literature. But what he puts into the term transcendental homelessness is basically that every person, and particularly in his research, it's every character in novel, is homeless. And his or her way through a certain story or through a certain practice is the search for home. That is a very metaphorical place. So it's not a physical place, but just some kind of state of mind that we're searching for. So the theory or the statement that we followed in the exhibition was that for contemporary artists today, home is not a physical space, it's not a location, but it is something transcendental, and it is rather so that the contemporary artists are rather homeless, or that they carry their homes with them. For example, we had artists who appealed to the concept of home through language, through working with local communities, or through certain memories they carry with themselves. So it was interesting to see that none of the artists really worked with a particular address, so to say, but rather with some non-physical states of mind.
And by non-physical state of mind, as in the example of going to residencies and everything, just to be clear about that, you mean that artists, many contemporary artists, are traveling a lot, are moving a lot. We're not in a period of time when someone has one home or one apartment physically for a long period of time. It's something more of the transcendental, or more of a state of mind, as you were saying, what home means, because they're traveling so much, literally.
Yes, well, that's true. Residencies play a very important role in modern art, well, in the contemporary artist practice, and they impact our connection to home in a very paradoxical way. So on one hand, this permanent traveling from one place to another between biennials, festivals, and fellowships breaks up our connection to home as a physical place. So I know artists who don't really have a home and or a flat somewhere because they are on the go and they just travel from one place to the other. But on the other hand, this mobility that we have today, thanks to new technologies and just the lifestyle we enjoy, this mobility and the residencies in particular, they expand the notion of home. So we don't, to put it in simple words, we don't have to be at a certain address, at a certain physical place in the world to feel like home.
I like that so much. So let's talk a little bit about contemporary artists also. In the U.S., artists are resisting an oppressive regime. What's happening in Russia? Are artists also reacting and resisting at the moment, the current regime?
Well, you know, as it is said, history repeats itself. And I believe that art is a very strong political instrument, and that artists are very influenced by what is happening in the country in terms of politics, and they use their language, whether it is socially engaged art, performance practice, or sometimes even abstract art, they use it to pull our attention to important problems, relevant problems. Art is nothing that can solve these problems, but it makes us think about certain issues. So from my experience, what is visible in Russia today is that many artists are politically engaged and talk about very, sometimes very uncomfortable and complicated issues, and use their practice to involve a large audience in this discussion. And I believe that it is very important. I can't say that they're having an easy life, though, and I think such stories as, for example, of Pavlensky are also very well-known abroad, but it is good to see that artists are not afraid of talking about politics openly.
Interesting. It's such a different... a state of affairs that we're all in, it seems. So how does the museum react to that? Are you having exhibits also that are kind of framing some of what you just said?
Well, we do. It's very, so we see a museum, not just our museum, but generally the role of a museum in the contemporary society as a platform also for political and social discussion. So our aim is not just to present, to exhibit some artworks, but to start a dialogue with a visitor. And just recently we had an exhibition that was called Rejected, and it was dedicated to artworks that were rejected for one or the other reason during the Soviet times or also today. And many of them were rejected due to political issues. And we had some of those works in the museum that were, for example, rejected in the 80s or in the 70s, but look totally fine and very neutral today. We also had some works involving, for example, the images of Vladimir Putin and showing some very critical perspectives that could have been a problem for someone, but we usually trust ourselves and trust our selection, so we actually didn't have any problems until now. So I hope it stays this way.
And what do you mean by problems until now? And in what type of problems? You mean actual censorship from the government or something else or seizing works?
Well, our activities are not subject to state censorship because we are not a state museum. So we get also very modest funding from the government and from the local authorities, which gives us a lot of independency. But sometimes there is a feeling that journalists or visitors feel uncomfortable in talking about particular issues or don't want to include one of the other work in their reviews, or for example, just visitors react negatively because what the artist's position is not the same as the visitor's position. But this is something that we accept as a matter of fact, and I think it's really important even when there is a conflict that an artwork starts, it's still a discussion. It's just important that it remains a dialogue and not a monologue.
Absolutely. It's wonderful talking to you, Anastasia. But before we go, I want to, I want to say that, you know, it's a very exciting museum, and I'm so glad that it's happening and that you're directing it and that it continues. I also want to ask you what you're reading right now. It could be off topic or not, but I'm always curious and ask the question at the end. What are you reading?
Well, I usually have several books at the same time that I'm reading. I actually have one book at the office that I look through during my lunch break and one book at home that I read before sleep. Which one do you want to hear about?
I'd like to hear about both.
Okay. So here at the office right now, I have a catalog of Document 14 on my table that I got at the exhibition in June, and I'm still looking it through, just a couple of projects, researching every project precisely. And I think I read about one or two projects every day and then just do some online research about the artists if I need to. So this is something that has to do a lot with my job. And also the other works of a museum sometimes borrowed from my desk. At home, next to my bed, I have a children's book that was just published recently. It is called The Story of an Old Flat. And it's a very interesting book. It has beautiful drawings, and it tells the story of an old flat in Moscow, a 100-year-long story, the story of the families who lived there. But through the story of a particular apartment, it tells about the history of Russia and of the country, so how it changed starting from the October Revolution in 1917 until today. So I'm planning to suggest it to my nephew, but first I wanted to read it on my own.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you shared that one in particular. Thank you so much, Anastasia. I want to just thank you for talking with me today. I really appreciate your work and our conversation.
Thanks a lot, and good luck with the upcoming interviews.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.